ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're enjoying your Memorial Day. This is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., going to around 11. This has been going on since 1982, mostly over with Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key last year. But we continue doing it in memory of him, and because it's a good thing for the general community to be able to discuss questions and try and get answers and what have you. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual links. Okay, if you need to reach me and you can't reach me via the repeater, email is a good way as any. That's for questions, if you have them, mailbag questions, we used to call them. You can suggest topics for discussion. You can offer me interesting technical puzzles. I like to offer them to participants, and we talk about them and discuss what they mean and how to figure them out. Or if you want me to poke Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space or NASA-related a bit of news or video and, you know, give you his opinion on it. So the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag at, my call sign is alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. There is a link page with a lot of very interesting links. The first few are more visual, so we're not going to really discuss it on the TechNet, but I thought you might enjoy it. One is a very fascinating optical illusion. I put together a little animated GIF of it to give you the brilliance of it. It's really a fascinating thing, so take a look at that when you have a chance. And the rest are articles that I've read and found particularly interesting and put on the list in case we have time to do the science talk segment of the Technical Net. So that's all available on my link page, which you can get to by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. In addition, we have a chat room running. You can either go to Limark, and they have a link for it, or you can just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. I try to maintain a stream of the W2VL repeater 24/7, and if you don't have a radio nearby and you want to listen to Limark at Glen Oaks, you just have to type into a browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you a feed from Limark. I want to remind everyone that Mike, KC2NJI, maintains a wonderful archive of past technical nets. It goes all the way back to September of 2006, and that's available at the website amateurradio.tv. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what my plans are for tonight. Okie doke, as per usual, we will ask people for any questions or topics of a technical nature. I will write down their first name and their call sign, and we'll try and get them in an orderly fashion. Unfortunately, Andy won't be with us for the next few weeks, so that will take us in one way or another to about 10:15 or so, when Paul, WS2N, will present us with the SpaceNet report. That'll go until about 11, and I'll come back and put a bow on it and wish you well and call it a night. We'll see what happens. I have some bits and pieces of interesting things to discuss with you guys. I hope you're in a participating mood, especially, you know, Memorial Day weekend is a possible reason for lack of participation, but I hope that isn't the case. So let me drop for a second, and I will ask people out there who have any questions or topics tonight to please give me your first name and your call sign.
82OGB. I think I got something in mind. WB2KWC, Ken.
W2BC, Rich. know. Tom. KD2, HCU, Eric.
Okay, very good. Sounds like we might actually be busy tonight. That's good. So first on the list was Craig. Craig, what's your question or your topic for tonight?
Something is, my 20-meter stick on my truck is behaving very strangely on its mount. On Friday, when I drove to West Hampton, the stick was up probably around, I'd say about 90 degrees, almost straight up, maybe a little bit slightly bent. I'd say about maybe 4 or 5 degrees. And it's on a spring, so usually that takes the beating if I were to hit any overpasses. And with the weather to West Hampton, it looked like it was around 10 or 12 degrees and much more slanted, even though that mount is pretty tight. What's up with that?
I would tend to assume that you bang that antenna. Now, you say it's on a spring mount?
Yeah, it's on a heavy duty spring mount on a Diamond K400. Basically, it's the same stud mount that a fire stick would hook up into. Instead, it's just a ham stick. But yeah, it's getting more and more slanted, but not very severely slanted, but just enough that it's like really slanted on an angle, like at the most maybe like 10 or 12 degrees. But I try to keep it all the way straight up.
Okay, so the way that you're describing it, the deformation is on the spring. It's not like it's deformed with the whip right above the spring. So is that accurate?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, once in a while I'll take my Allen key and I'll loosen it, try to get it back up to where it needs to be, and then retighten it, I guess. Also, I'll see what your opinion is. And then I have one other small thing, I guess, similar to it that I've been having an issue with.
Okay. Now, the way that you describe it as tightening fixes it makes it sound as though there's not a lock washer or something that's really locking it into position, and little by little the threads are walking their way backwards and you're getting a loose connection. So the important question is the spring itself deformed and at an angle, or is the actual mount to the chassis loose and presenting as a kind of a tilted mess?
My guess is it's probably the mount itself, but yeah, it's mounted, it's not side mounted on the back of my trunk. It's actually hooked up from the bottom, so it has like a super slight slant, maybe like 1 degree, and yeah, that's usually how I try the best I can to get it straight up. But enough so like that it's like going like all the way down, but like a little bit so like that it's maybe like, I guess you could say maybe like maybe a quarter of the way down, I suppose.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like the spring itself is deformed. It sounds like your mount is wobbly and getting loose repeatedly. You might want to try a lock washer to bite into everything and keep it tight. You might want to try a little bit of a Loctite on it just to keep the screw-in part tight. I mean, unless I'm missing something, it sounds like your mount isn't well clamped on the area, and it's just kind of unwinding and loosening and moving around.
Well, I mean, it's not unloosening to the point where the antenna would fall down, like, completely, but two that I have. My other two mounts, but like two separate mounts side by side, And this is also with the 20 meter stick as well. Sometimes when I do loose, even if I wanted to have it on an angle, it's not catching and it's not allowing me to actually tilt it all the way down. It's like the threads are not catching in so that I can like reshape the mount to like where I want it to be, as if I wanted to adjust the vertical slant rather than the horizontal one. I mean, like if I were to, like I can change the way it tilts like side to side, but if I wanted to like go completely back from the truck, for some reason that won't work. And it's like only going back as far as like maybe 20 degrees, maybe 22, but it's not like going like all the way down and letting me like fiddle with the entire shape of the mount in its form.
Okay, so it sort of sounds like it's a fundamental problem with the mount interfacing in the area that you're trying to place it. Have you considered looking into different types of mounts that might be better suited for the portion of the car that you're trying to get it clamped onto?
I've always used that one of the two axes I can't seem to, like, get to readjust, even if it's loosened all the way. Like the circle part of it, as if I were to, like, tilt it side to side, that still works. But if I wanted to, like, use it, like, as if the lever part was not working, that's what I'm having an issue with. Like, I can bend it, like, super, super slightly, but it's not catching for me to, like, adjust it all the way, as if I wanted it fully horizontal, which I wouldn't want to use horizontal, but you know what I mean.
Okay, specifically, what model mount are you using?
Diamond K400.
Yeah, I heard someone in the background. They got cut off rather quickly, so if you want to give it another try.
Just a brain hiccup, NO3NO. You might try a little nylon fishing line or something else to the top of the mast and then tying off to an appropriate area of the car. That's all I have. I've heard good things said about that trick. Okay, NO3NO clear.
Okay, thanks, Tom. I'm taking a look at some pictures of it. It doesn't really answer any of the questions that I had about it. Is the problem with the mount shifting the position of the mount, or is the problem mounting the mount to your car? There's three possible failure modes. One is that the antenna itself isn't properly hooked up to the top of this trunk mount. The other is that the mechanics of the trunk mount aren't adjusted properly or damaged in some way, and they're not able to be tightened up. And the third is that the bottom that's supposed to clamp into the part of your chassis is not really gripping enough metal to do its job.
KD2OGB. Well, the mount is piercing into the metal of the car. It's just I can't seem to get one of the two axes to change if I wanted to make an adjustment. Like, for example, with the Diamond K400 on my 20 meter stick, it's hooked up from the bottom and not hooked up to the side. I can get it to move around if it were to accidentally tilt on its side, but if I wanted to tilt it farther back, it won't. It's getting stuck for some reason. Like, I can only tilt it, like, as far as maybe 15, 20 degrees, and I can't tilt it any farther than that. It's getting stuck.
Okay. Is it possible that there's any mechanical object nearby that's impairing its ability? The way that I see it, it has basically two different axes. It can rotate around in both the X and the Y. There's a little swivel that rotates it, you know, so that there's two axes, and one of them apparently for you is stuck. So either there's some mechanical impairment on the outside, or the movement itself might be damaged.
Well, it worked a couple of times, and this technically is all three of them that I'm having this problem with. I mean, one of them, if I were to completely remove from the car, I can sort of get the axis to change. But kind of difficult to, I guess, but either way, they're all working sort of okay. It's just my 20-meter stick flexes further and further sometimes as I drive, and I usually like it when it's all the way vertical.
Okay. Also, most likely your 20-meter stick is probably heavier than your other antennas. Is that a possibility?
It's 4 foot of fiberglass plus 4 foot of steel whip, so 8 feet tall. How heavy do you think it is? I mean, the other two antennas are still straight. I mean, sometimes I got to fiddle with those, but those are fine. It's because the 20-meter sometimes tends to flex a little bit.
Okay. I mean, I've had no experience with the K400. If there's anyone out there who's had experience with the K400, have they had any kind of similar experiences that they can share with Craig? Well, I guess not. I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know. It's difficult for me to exactly figure out what's going on. At first, it sounded like the attachment, the lower attachment, was coming loose. But now it sounds, the way you're describing it, that the actual two axes of the mount itself are somewhat limited. It's either some type of internal problem with the mechanics of these axes, or else, unbeknownst to you, there's some kind of object that's kind of butting up against it someplace and making its rotation limited. It's kind of difficult to tell over the radio.
I'm going to have to probably take them all off when I get the chance to kind of visualize it. I mean, my two tri-band and dual-bander antennas, those are fine. Sometimes I just tend to play with the mount a little bit, like just to see what they would look like, but those two mounts are fine. It's just, even if I wanted to adjust them, they just get stuck, as if I wanted to tilt the antenna backwards, but it's just the 20-meter. That just tilts on its own as I drive, but not as much, though. I mean, it doesn't really concern me, but it's like I have to adjust it every single time I stop, if you know what I mean. But once in a while, I'll have to change it.
Is there any control on that axis to increase the friction? Because I'm thinking that what's going on is that particular antenna probably has a higher cross-section and is getting a lot more air resistance than your others. So there's more of a force on that axis of the K400 mount. I would think that there is either a lock or a friction adjustment that could tighten its movement even for a greater force. Is that a control that's part of the K400?
K400 is held together by two Allen key screws. You have to unscrew those to change the two axes. And again, the one that I'm just having issues with is the, I guess I could say the vertical axis, whereas if you wanted the antenna straight up versus slanted backwards, that's just what I'm having an issue with.
Okay. How tight have you tightened those torque screws?
Tight enough that it clicks.
Okay, I'm not quite sure why a Torx screw would say click, unless you had it on a tool that's set for a certain amount of force, I guess, then it would click. But otherwise, it's basically just a screw.
Yeah, but Diamond is pretty reliable, I guess. And, I mean, people that I know that have had Diamond haven't really had any issues. I mean, once in a while, they'll need to tighten it a little. I mean, the four tiny screws that normally hold the mount, that's another reason as to why it could be flexing back so far. I mean, I check those every now and then, and so far that hasn't hiccuped on me at all. It's just the big Allen key screw holding the thing together. But I'm going to have to look at it, maybe take it off, try to see if I can maybe get something to clamp on in there to make it turn, I guess. But, yeah, that's just the only thing that I'm having an issue with.
Okay. That's a curiosity. Again, I'm not 100% sure what's doing the clicking. My immediate response was that maybe it's just not quite getting as tightened as the torque screw can get tightened. If there's some kind of limit to the amount of torque that you can put to it, then you can't go any farther or you're going to break it. But I would probably just try and see how tight you can tighten it and see if that helps at all.
Yeah, I might as well do that. So, all right, that's all I got for now. If anything else comes up on my mind tonight, I will pass it along. So thank you. Net Control AC2GS, KD2OTD.
Well, you're welcome, Craig. Always appreciate participation. Next on my list is Ken, WB2KWC. What's your question or topic for tonight?
Okay, thank you, Roy. I'm having a strange problem with a television. A few times a day I will go up to my room and the television will be on. I turn it off, I double check that it's off, I go downstairs, and then a few hours later the TV will be on again. At first I thought, well, gee, it might be some, infrared or something from the sun, but it's happened twice today, and we certainly didn't have any sun showing today. AC2GS, WB2KWC.
Well, that's an interesting one, but basically you don't need sunlight to have a malfunctioning infrared detector misdiagnose a burst of infrared and decode it as off or on. I've had just static cling produce it. You know, you rub something against something else, or you peel adhesive tape very quickly, and it gives you a little bit of a spark, and that usually produces infrared. So one question, have you tried to cover up the place where the infrared sensor is on the TV just as an experiment?
I've thought about doing that, but I have not done it yet. As far as tape or something else, there is no one in the room at the time where it goes on. It just mysteriously goes on while we are downstairs. So it's not something that we are doing that I'm aware of.
KD2OGD, how close is the TV to a light source?
Craig, at the time this is happening, the nearest light sources that shine directly at it are probably 10 or so feet away.
And light 2H?
Yes, Lou.
Ken? Now think hard here. Have you transmitted from your home, even downstairs, in the interval? Because I know when I transmit on UHF, I can turn on garage lights.
I will have to be aware of that. I did a lot of transmitting yesterday and today because it was the CQWPX contest.
B2SDP.
Yes, Chris.
Ken, that's definitely what's doing it. It's RF. I have a couple of devices that come from a DirecTV receiver in a bedroom in my house, and when I transmit during the day, I'll find it on and off from transmitting. And the closest to my antenna, not very close, it's maybe 40, 50 feet away from the base of the antenna, but it does go on and off. I have another TV that comes on and off. It's probably RF. But one other thing to check, a lot of TVs have timers built into them. Sometimes you can set the timer on accident to come on at a certain time. Might want to check that as well.
B2OZB, another comment?
Yeah, sure, Craig.
Yeah, set the timer on your TV also, Ken. That might be another thing. It's very possible it's RF, because sometimes if I transmit too close to my computer, the sound effect for whenever a hard drive would be connected or disconnected or some other device would go off if I transmit too close to the computer. And then as soon as I let go of the PTT button, it acts as if I'm reconnecting a drive again. It's definitely RF.
N2HUH.
Yes, Andy.
Good evening, Roy, and Annette. Yeah, my money's on the transmitting will cause the problem, and that could be HF, VHF, or UHF. I won't bore anybody with all the things I've turned on, but however, I want to add a comment to this is that I was wondering why finally I realized I didn't have any hot water for my hot water heater, which has an electronic module in it. And I finally realized that it's every time I go on 160 meters with my amplifier, my water heater would malfunction and it wouldn't go on. But it had an electronic module in it for safety. And not only did it, at the beginning I kind of said to hell with this, so I'll just relight the pilot light because I want to go on 160. Eventually the module just broke. Got damaged and had to get another one. So 160 meters with an amplifier was not only causing a problem, turning something off, but it also damaged the module eventually. N2HUH.
Yeah, well,
that's interesting information. And yeah, it sounds a lot like it could be RF. You might want to try an RF choke on the HDMI cable, depending upon the type of HDMI the television has. A lot of times the HDMI is designed to pass digital signals, and if it picks up a lot of RF, it might decode that hash into an on signal. So if I was going to try RF choking things, the first thing that I would probably try would be the HDMI cable, then secondarily, of course, the power cord.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
One of the remote is facing the TV. You know, sometimes if they're going down, or even if the battery's going down, you can get an erratic transmission out of the remote. But yeah, it's a long shot, but it's a possibility. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, that's a good idea as well. Usually I find that failing remotes, you know, don't really work rather than work excessively. But electronics sometimes works in mysterious ways. So, anyone else with any ideas, please?
N03 and 0.
Yes, Tom.
I know that there's a certain company that makes practical jokes. They have a list for TVs, radios, etc. And you can push an on button and it'll turn TV on or off. And you say to yourself, gee, what the heck happened? So I have to ask you, do you have a neighbor who could be considered a little bit of a smart you-know-what?
Okay. Well, my nearest neighbor by the TV would probably be, at least 20, 30 feet away. And this is an IR remote, so I can't imagine infrared coming through my windows with closed shades and doing that.
Yeah, I would agree, Ken. I mean, I've heard of malicious neighbors, but, with drilling a hole through your wall to slip a fiber optic to put infrared, I don't think so. I think the best bet, as many people mentioned, is the RF. And like I said, I would consider trying out those RF chokes, or else you just have to get used to unplugging it when you leave the room.
Okay, you've certainly given me a whole bunch of ideas. As far as the timer goes, that was one of the first things that I checked. It does have a timer, but that timer is disabled. As far as RF, I have a couple of sources. One of them is I've got an NFED half-wave low-band antenna in my attic, which is probably pretty close to that television. So I will have to, be aware of when I'm transmitting to see if that's the problem. And also below that, almost directly below that, two floors down in my den, I've got a DMR hotspot. So that's got a little transmitter on 430-something megahertz in the 70-centimeter band. Maybe I'll power that off when not in use. And I don't think it's HDMI because from what I recall, to control the TV on HDMI, you have to enable something I think called CEC for control of audio systems. So thanks for the ideas. I'll have to play around and report when I've either got results or failed to produce results.
AC2GS. Well, my money's probably on the NFED. NFED is throwing a lot more watts than the hotspot. And although NFEDs have a lot of very positive aspects, one of the negative ones is it's not unusual for common mode to go right back down that transmission line right into the shack. So that would be my guess. The hotspot, as far as I'm aware, most hotspot transceivers throw a big 10 milliwatts, so that would be unusual, I would think. But you'll see what happens, and please come back and tell us. I'd be fascinated to learn.
Okay, I will do that, and I'll be aware of when I'm on the air, and also talk to my wife and make sure that she lets me know when strange things happen to our haunted TV.
E2SCP?
Yes.
Okay, just a quick question. Do you have I'm sure you have a Balun to your NFED antenna. Is that Balun grounded?
No, it is not grounded, and from what I recall, it's an unun, but basically the same kind of thing. It is not grounded.
I would strongly suggest get a ground up to that. So I have an NFED as well, and the guy that designed it, that I bought it from, told me without grounding on the onion, and you're right, onion, of course, you will get a lot of RF out of it, and if you ground it, it gets rid of all of it, and that was definitely the case on my end.
Okay, my concern about that is that the antenna is up in the attic. In order to get to a ground, I'm wondering if the ground wire is going to be an element of that antenna and carry RF with it.
It shouldn't. Mine's 40 feet up in the air, and I have a ground wire, I think a number 8 wire that goes straight down the side of the house to a ground rod. I pounded into the ground, so it's 40 feet long. Didn't cause any issues. I had no difference with it and without it, but it did kill a lot of RF I was getting.
Okay. I'll have to find a day like today to go up to the attic, because when it's sunny outside, that attic is worse than a sauna.
Okay, very good, Ken. Yeah, like I said before, NFEDs are really nice. They have a lot of aspects that are very favorable. The problem, though, is unless you're absolutely transmitting on a full half wave resonance, anything else without proper grounding is going to cause common mode reflection back down your transmission line. So, again, that's my likely suspect.
Okay. Yeah, the transmission line does run from the UNUN, which is at the end of the house that the TV is on. So if the transmission line is radiating, it could do it, because the shack is at the opposite end of the house.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you don't have a full half-wave resonance, it really wants a counterpoise. The laws of physics will not be denied. So since the closest thing it has to a counterpoise is your transmission line, it'll just use it as a common mode line, and all the RF will kind of spurt about your house that way. So yeah, it's always good to ground it. Again, if you religiously use it for half wave resonance, that shouldn't be a problem, but almost everyone tries to expand beyond that very limited aspect to an NFED.
I mean, theoretically it is tuned for the ham bands. I never trimmed it, so if it's up in the funk portion of the band, I'm mostly down at CW. It just might be enough to cause it to do some radiation, and throw off junk.
Yeah, wouldn't be the first time. So I wish you luck. I think you've kind of landed on the solution for this one. But I'm looking forward to the next installment of this. So I wish you good luck, Ken.
Okay, thank you. I will try some of the solutions, and I'll also keep a careful, pay attention to when I'm on the air.
Okie doke. Next on our list for tonight is Rich, W2BZ. What's your question for tonight or topic, Rich?
Well, I have a weird one. It's about a cell phone, my cell phone. I have a daughter who lives in Israel, and she sent me an audio file that willy-nilly plays in the background whether I'm on a call or not. It just sometimes plays and it sometimes doesn't play. And I have erased every MP4 and every other file on that phone that could be an audio file, and still, the thing plays whatever it wants to in the background. It's just as loud as the conversation that I'm having, and it's driving me nuts. Would anybody ever run into that? Go ahead.
Okay, that's an interesting question. Now, I assume this is an Android phone, because you best to describe what the operating system is for the audience.
Yes, it is Android. It's the Moto G Android phone.
Okay, anyone out there with experience with an Android? I'm an iPhone type of guy. You got sent an audio file that just kind of got stuck in the operating system and just randomly plays? That sounds like the plot for a bad horror movie.
It does sound rather strange. Do you notice any programs accompanying that? I'm wondering if somehow that sound file has been set to the sound file to play when some kind of a notification is given, when you get a text message, when you get a phone call, or possibly a certain person giving you a phone call or something like that.
Tried YouTube. I tried, you know, opening up YouTube while the thing was playing. I've tried opening up Facebook. I've opened up WhatsApp where she sent it. I reopened it up. I've opened up every program that plays audio on my phone, and I can't find. And that's after I deleted every extension that is audio that I know of. That is audio. There's an ORB extension. I don't know if that's audio, but I don't know what it is. So if anybody does, you can please tell me. But this one is a head scratcher. It just starts when it wants to, and it doesn't play when it doesn't want to, when it's taking a rest. Back to net.
KD2FYU.
Yes, George.
Thank you, Roy. I have something similar, and I will eventually find that the sledgehammer is going to be my resolution. I think it's Google Play. What's happening is, to me, when I'm playing or there is anything that is musical going on in my living area, the Google Play will flash by and tell me to download music. And I've tried to disable Google Play, but I cannot. A force stop or disable is not an option with that app. So I find that if I'm playing, if music of any level that is in my area, in my living area, of a reasonable level is going on, even with my data turned off, it's coming in on my cell phone bandwidth through Google Play, telling me that I have the option to download music.
Now, I did try that too, because I did see that same thing flash by about Google Play. And I also went to apps and could not delete it. And there that stopped. But you might be right, George, but how do we, I guess I got to research Google, how you get rid of Google.
That's the next thing I'm going to do. If that doesn't work, it's the ball peen hammer. KD2, FIU. Thank you for bringing me in, Roy.
You're welcome, George. It might be more difficult than we all think because, Google is kind of locked into this Android. I did a very, very quick Google search, talk about killing something with itself. It talks about easily delete the Google Play Music local data from your device to free up space. It says Hide app makes it so that Google Play Music will no longer show up on your homepage or all apps view. After confirming, Play Music will no longer appear in your app drawer and you'll no longer be able to open it. So in some ways, Google is your friend. Google away, Rich, and hopefully they'll give you a way. My best guess is ultimately you'll be able to hide it, but I don't know if you'll be able to get rid of it unless, of course, you use George's sledgehammer technique.
KD2VDW.
Roy, you got to come back with it again. It was a double for the first half of your transmission. KD2FIU.
KD2VDW.
Okay, KD2VDW recognized. Give me just a second. I'm just saying that I Googled something, and it said that you can hide it. It says it's easily deleted, but then it goes on with how to hide the application. So my best suggestion is to try Googling any way that you can remove it. My gut feeling is Google might hide it, but it is not going to remove it. But lots of luck, and the way I ended the last one was, if that doesn't work, then consider George's sledgehammer technique.
There was another station in there.
Yes, that was Mike. Mike, what did you want to say?
My apologies. I didn't hear the whole thing, but I did hear you guys say you can't get rid of Google. You can get rid of Google 100%. I have a Galaxy S10 that Google Play is out. Google Play services is out. Everything Google is out. I sideload my app, and I use an app called NetGuard, which is sort of like a VPN. Basically, it's a firewall. So I lock down all my traffic, and I only tell which apps can and cannot have access to it. You use look up Google ADP, Alpha Delta Bravo, and that's how you can disable and turn off and delete apps that Google won't let you.
Okay, that's good to know, Mike. So did you get all that, Rich?
I did, Google ADB and NetGuard. I will do that ASAP. If I can't do this, what I am trying to avoid is wiping the phone and wiping the cache and wiping the whole thing and seeing if that takes care of it. But then I'm afraid, I'll lose a lot of contacts and whatever, even if I back them up. I'm weary of doing that and trying to restore stuff because that doesn't work all the time either. But I will look up this Google ADD and NetGuard. Thank you.
WB2KW6.
ADB. And if you get stuck, write me, use my email on QRZ, and I can help you.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Ken wanted to say something as well.
Okay, from what I recall, Google ADB is the Android debugger. Essentially, it's a developer's tool where you have greater than normal user capability for doing good and for doing harm. So let me quote, here be dragons.
Okay, so you've been warned, Rich. That's what they used to put on the maps at the edge where they didn't know exactly what went beyond there. So it's a powerful tool. You're kind of used to powerful PC tools, so you might not be afraid of Android developers' tools. Again, because my gut feeling is Google really doesn't want you to do any of this, so they're not going to make it particularly easy.
No, but it's just boggles the mind that Google or any other company, whether it's Apple or Google or Microsoft, would let a bug like this. It's just such an amazing bug, such an annoying bug, that they would allow this to happen, because I guarantee it, and I know this from the computer business, that if it's happening to me, it's happening to other people, a.k.a. George and millions of others. So it just started 2 days ago, and it's driving me nuts. So thanks, Roy. I'll try it, and I'll report back if I'm successful. I'll try everything I can this week.
AC2GS. Well, good luck, Rich, and I hope you solve it. I'm sure if you apply yourself, you'll find a way. It's a shame when developers and companies kind of take this attitude of, that they know what's good for us and we better take it. Most of these big companies, in one way or another, manifest that type of attitude. And, you know, right now I'm feeling a little increased happiness that I'm an iPhone user. It doesn't feel that good when I have to pay for those overpriced things, but at least I don't have weird music playing at odd times. But I wish you all the luck, Rich. Okay, next on my list is Tom, N-O-3-N-O. What's your question or topic for tonight, Tom?
I think somebody doubled with you. Let it go to that station first.
Okay, the other station that I doubled with, your turn.
I think it was the station that was talking about the Android debugger, and he was saying, don't be afraid of it.
Okay, then that would be Mike, KD2VDW. Well, you know, I mean, some people, if you give them a hammer, unfortunately, they will hammer their fingers. But you have to respect whatever tool that you have and what it's capable of. You shouldn't necessarily be frightened of it, but you should be wary of it a bit. So anything that's a powerful programming tool can work both ways, but, you know, Rich is a big boy. He's been involved in PCs for many, 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 many years, and so I'm sure he won't brick his Android phone.
Won't brick it, but I may erase it, and then it's about restoring it that I cringe at. We'll see. I'll report back. Thank you. Back to net.
Okay, very good, Rich. Next on to Tom, N-O-3-N-O.
Okay, thank you. I've been in the user group. I've been kicking this around, and some of the fellows have come up with an idea. One of the guys said that the settings on my antivirus are too tight, and that's causing all the problems why I can't download it. So after the net, after I've heard the benefit of everybody else's expertise, I'm going to call up my tech support company and see if I can loosen them up, because I think the thing is giving too many false positives.
Yeah, Tom, that was probably me. I kind of typed that while someone else was talking, so it was me on both the radio and the chat room. Yeah, it sounds like your antivirus is a little over-nervous, which happens to many people. I have an antivirus that's reasonably good. And yet I downloaded two pieces of software off of that website that yours is refusing. Mine is WebRoot. I mean, there's a lot of good antiviruses out there. Just out of curiosity's sake, which antivirus is your computer using?
I believe it's malware.
Okay. I've used malware in the past. I kind of use it once in a while to just check on things. That's curious. It's usually reasonably well-behaved from my experiences. Sometimes, you know, even the best antivirus has files placed in the questionable area, and it's, you know, occasionally I will have a program that my antivirus says, you know, I'm not sure about this. I haven't seen it much, so I don't have an opinion, but maybe you shouldn't use that. And it's usually programs that I'm well aware of the programmer and the site and everything, and I'll use it despite that lighthearted warning. Theoretically, you could shut down your antivirus for a short period of time if you trusted these sites and download the program and run the program. But if you have any doubts about it, then perhaps you're better off just contacting Malbiteware and seeing if there's a setting that would be more useful for you.
Roger. I'm definitely going to contact my tech support company for my PC and see what I can do about loosening it up, at least for a little while, at least for the duration of the download. But thank you very much, gentlemen. 73. I'll be so listening. NL3NO.
Okay, very well, Tom. And as I mentioned before, depending upon how secure you feel with the site and the software and such, the quick and easiest, if a little dirty, workaround is simply almost every antivirus I've ever seen has a mode where it stops really working for the time being. Some of them that are very cautious have a timer, like it'll say turn off the antivirus for 30 minutes or 60 minutes or what have you, and then it gives you access to the questionable sites. Then you're kind of vouching for them yourself, but you can download them. So that's another option as well for you.
Roger, we'll do that. Thank you much. NL3NO, be on the side.
Okay, good luck, Tom. Next on our list for tonight is Eric, KD2HCU. What's your question or topic for tonight, Eric?
Yes, good evening. Thank you. Yeah, I have a question about random length and fed antennas. I have a 50-footer up in my attic. It's not straight, wrapped around a little bit, and the 9-to-1 UNON is also up there. I'll let it drop for a minute. Okay, I don't know if this times out. I have a 15-foot counterpoise on up in the attic, and I also have like a... I guess it's about a 20-foot counterpoise that I bring through downstairs. I'm wondering, if I extend the length of counterpoises, will it work better? Is there a certain formula for counterpoise? Can a counterpoise be too long? And that's my question.
Okay, this kind of goes back to about a month or two ago, when a gentleman didn't quite know what to make of the underlying theory for quarter wave ground plane verticals, and what's the equation that explains how ground planes work, or counterpoise is another name for a ground plane. And the problem was and will be that there's no actual equations. These are all kind of experimental findings of individual experimenters and tinkerers. So you're going to get almost an infinite number of answers, because there's nothing quite in the textbook to my knowledge. Theoretically, it is good to have a counterpoise that is at least about an eighth of a wavelength long. Can you have one that's too long?